Welcome back. I just want to talk with Steve. You're listening to News Talk WLOB 1310 AM. How are we doing, Deb?
Just great.
Wow, that was some first hour, wasn't it?
Amazing.
But here we are, back for the second hour. Thank you for joining us. We have a guest in the studio, here in the Palatial Studio, here at Tidesmart Global World Headquarters. Please join me in welcoming Bill Ryan Jr. Hey, Bill.
How are you?
We've known each other for years, but I'm reading Sharkey's notes here.
Seems inaccurate already.
Already. We have to go through some fact-checking here. He says, you've got vast business experience, Maine startups, you're a sports business guru, the epicenter of Maine sports run through you.
Sounds all true, so far.
Sharkey, do we let him write his own intro, or what the heck do we have going on here? All kidding aside, Bill Ryan Jr. is a longtime friend, and we work together a little bit. Deb, we're supposed to do journalistic disclosure here, right?
Yes.
Broadcasting,
yes.
We have standards that are important on WLOB.
Yes.
Bill and I work together, and that about a year ago, I became a minority owner partner in the Maine Red Claws, and Bill and I work together, and also I'm involved in one of the partnership groups for Forefront at Thompson Point, we'll talk about for a sec. So that's the disclosure at the beginning.
Well done.
Thank you. You can report to HQ that the disclosure was done.
I certainly will.
Check. So chairman of the Maine Red Claws, you've been involved, and for those of our listeners that aren't aware, Maine Red Claws is what's called the D-League affiliate for the NBA, and just recently, the Red Claws became a sole affiliate of the Celtics, we'll talk about. You're a co-host of Atlantic Coast Radio in the Pits, owner of Oxford Plains Speedway, which is a great venue for family fun out there in beautiful Oxford. And there's something here. I didn't even know this. I thought I blocked this out of my memory, Bill, but you were an attorney.
I was.
But then you got out of the dark side.
Yeah, it wasn't for me. You know, it was one of those things that I tell the story, it's only half a joke, that my parents kept calling me and waking me at noon my senior year in college and said, what are you going to do next year? And one day I said, I'm going to go to law school. So I had no background in law, not sure I'd met a lawyer, maybe watched a couple episodes of L.A. Law in the mid-'80s and thought it looked cool. But went to law school and practiced law here in Portland for 4 years and just moved on to different things.
I've got to tell you, even independent of our friendship, my favorite category of human beings in the whole world, and Deb, you know this because we talk about this a great deal, my favorite subset category of human beings are people that became lawyers, because it shows that you've got to have some aptitude, you've got to show up at class, apparently there's some test involved.
Yeah, there's a test, yeah.
So that's the first hurdle, but people who leave the profession.
Yeah.
So if there was going to be a category of like the sweet spot of people bright enough, interesting enough to get involved with law, but then whatever reason, and everyone has their different reasons, but then has the wherewithal to get out.
Too lazy to do the working by the hour thing. You know, when you're keeping track of your time in 6 minute increments, which is what you got to do when you're selling your time as an attorney, it's a tough business. You know, it can be interesting. Obviously, it's a wide-ranging profession. There's a lot of guys and gals that are in the courtroom every day and doing all that kind of stuff, and that can, I'm sure, be exciting. But
yeah, the whole six-minute thing, because it feels like every time I call my attorney, I get like five other attorneys on the phone, and you can almost hear the stopwatch in the background.
Yeah.
And it's like, and the funny thing is, the person at the law firm that is in charge of tracking the time to bill you, you have to pay for their time. It's like this weird Rubik's Cube, but what is this? But some sort of weird test where the person charging you in figuring out the time adds to the time for the privilege of that.
Yeah.
So I applaud you getting out of that profession. So hey, let's move on. You're involved with motorsports. We want to talk about Oxford Plains Speedway, involved with basketball, the Maine Red Claws, which is after three seasons, is already kind of has a great legacy in the community, involved with some development going on. But first and foremost, Deb, because we've been talking about it for 2 weeks, haven't we?
Tell me.
You don't even know where I'm going with this,
do you? Honestly don't, but normally I don't.
Why don't I put you on the spot? You just said,
right ahead.
Okay, I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that to you. Bill just came back from the Olympics.
I did.
As we say,
he went over the pond and he came back. So I want to hear all about it. Listeners want to hear all about it. Deb wants to hear about it. What events did you go to? What did you think about the experience? Did you have fish and chips or whatever it is they have over there? Tell us about what it was like going to London over the last week for the Olympics.
Yeah, it was interesting. We went basically the day before the opening ceremonies, and didn't go to the opening ceremonies themselves, but did watch it, which was kind of probably more interesting. Watched it in an English pub with all the reaction of you know, kind of local people and stuff. But went to a number of different sports, some which I had never seen before. I think most which I had never seen before. We went to archery, which was amazing.
Oh,
they're hitting 70 meters out, and they're shooting these arrows.
Can you do the conversion, first of all? I had this conversation with Katie this morning.
Yeah.
My third grade teacher, big liar. She told me the metric system.
Yeah, absolutely.
She told me the metric system was critical. And then you just mentioned meters, and you might as well mention, you know, some sort of Star Trek term like get galgons or something. I've got no idea. You know, so how many meters? What approximately is that in like real?
200, you know? A little bit more than 210 feet, right? So it's a meter's a little bit more than a yard.
Gotcha.
So we're talking more than 210 feet. But we were lucky enough to see the gold medal match between Italy and the United States. And there's actually, which I never knew, there's a shot clock in archery. And the Italian archer, with 1 second left on the shot clock, hit a 10, which he needed to win. And they beat the United States by 1 point. So it was
really
wow.
So it was like Hunger Games, only different.
But you know, you would, you know, that was, I think, probably the thing that I took away from the Olympics the most, was some of these sports that you wouldn't necessarily think would be as exciting as they were. And we had the good fortune, just by chance, happened to sit next to the brother of one of the participants, one of the Americans that was actually one of the archers. So he was kind of filling us in on you know, his brother and what was going on.
Was he up in the cheap seats with you, or were you down in the great seats with him?
You know, archery didn't have enough seats to have cheap seats. You know, they probably had a few thousand seats. So so we saw archery, which was great. We saw badminton. Pretty cool. We saw table tennis.
Back up to bat. We got a lot to cover.
Right,
yeah, this is a long show, so
no problem.
You buzz through these things.
No,
this isn't one of like your car auto shows where we don't have enough content. Did you hear about the scandal with the badminton?
Yeah, that was after we had seen it already. So we saw scandal free. Nobody was intentionally losing the games that we saw. The interesting thing about badminton was the place was completely lack of ventilation, because it affects, I guess, the play, because the shuttlecock is so right.
We know all the terminology here at Tide Sport Talk with Steve-O.
Is so light that there's basically no ventilation in the place, and that was
I wouldn't have known that, Deb. Would you have known that?
I did not know that.
I didn't know until about halfway through the first game, when I was sweating, saying to myself, "What's going on in here?" And my son said, "Yeah, they had problems with ventilation and so on and so forth."
So turn on the air conditioning, and that little delicate shuttlecock, you know, it comes off the racket at 130 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It deaccelerates down to like nothing 10 feet away.
But that was certainly interesting too. Yeah, I mean the speed that thing goes and the reaction time, and they were one of the matches we watched. They had a 36 hit rally that happened in 35 seconds.
Wow.
So you're talking you know, more than one back and forth per second. Pretty amazing. You wouldn't think you'd be athletic, but it certainly is. I mean, there's definitely a skill to it and an athleticism that you might not imagine.
By the way, we have Bill Ryan Jr. He is at the epicenter of sports here in Maine, and he's giving us our official Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O Olympic report, because he's fresh back from London. So the funny thing about badminton is, at what point at the family barbecue, When Uncle Fred and Aunt Susie pull out the badminton net, and you know Uncle Frank is kind of, you know, he's had too much to drink and he's laying down in the hammock, and the kids are like, you know, putting his hand in warm water and doing all that, those kind of shenanigans. At what point does somebody at the family picnic go, "Look at little Johnny hit the badminton. He's got something."
Yeah, he's
because
a prodigy.
How do you go into a pro of badminton without going through the family barbecues? Because it feels like, has anyone ever played badminton anywhere other than a family barbecue?
I haven't.
Yeah, it just seems like that's the feeder program for an Olympic sport is the family barbecue.
You know, I think obviously in the States, that's probably why we don't succeed is because we don't have the feeder system.
The rigorous training that's needed to hit the shuttlecock. Yeah,
I'm not kidding you though. I mean, it's if my kids were younger, if I had a 5-year old or something like that, that's one of those kind of sports that you'd head to because how many competitive badminton players are there in the United States?
You're right.
Can't imagine a ton, right? I mean, so if you want to have your child grow up and be an Olympic athlete at some point.
That's something we should do here in Maine because we're always searching for things. And, you know, it's not like curling, which is a winter sport,
right.
Which how much fun is that with the big curling pucks? But you need an ice rink. It's got to be really level or the little curling pucks slide off. Badminton, relatively small space.
Yep.
You can play it indoors or outdoors when you're in the summer during the barbecue.
You should start that. The Maine Badminton Academy. You could start
yes.
recruiting kids at 5 years go. Old. Maybe build an extra dorm off the side of this place for the young badminton players.
God, that's
the smoke's coming out of his ears now.
We'll mark that down. We've covered badminton. You weren't there for the scandal.
Wasn't there for the scandal.
What do you think from the scandal? You've been involved with sports. You've been involved in athletics your whole life. Do you have an opinion on it? For those of you that don't follow closely the dynamic sport of badminton, a number of the badminton, was it from Japan and Korea or was it?
I'm not sure where the teams are from, to be honest with you, but they basically didn't want to play in the next round against the higher seed team.
And so they basically tanked the match and they were hitting the little shuttlecock right into the net. And it was clear they were tanking the match.
Right.
And their point was there's nothing in the Olympic rules about tanking, but there is something in terms of the Olympic oath, like you're in the Olympics, you're supposed to show up and try, right?
You would imagine that they could have probably done a better job of looking like that they were trying to compete.
Right.
But, yeah, you just got to compete, right? And you're going to face that team, the best teams anyway, at some point.
Well, I think they wanted to medal.
I think
the idea was why would you want to face the number one seeded team if you're the fifth seeded team if you could just tank? But, yeah, what a real blemish for the sport of badminton.
Yeah, I don't know that it will ever recover, really.
I think only
the Maine Badminton Academy can maybe put some honesty and integrity back into the sport of badminton.
I'm serious, Deb. We need to look into that.
I think it's a great idea.
Because we're known for winter sports, right? For skiing,
sure.
And we're known for that, and Seth Westcott, and, you know, it feels like we're overusing Seth Westcott as an Olympic athlete because he's talented and he's great and everything, but we need more diversity in terms of sports, in terms of people.
Yeah, I'd like to see a 6-year-old badminton star.
Yeah, and to tell you the truth, I've played the sport. Not that hard.
No.
Really? it really isn't. You clearly need reflexes because the little thing's coming towards you, but there hasn't been a Woods family barbecue where I've lost at badminton.
Ooh,
I'm just saying.
That's impressive.
Well,
yeah.
You know, there's still the 2016 games in Rio.
Yes.
I mean, if you start preparing right now.
Yeah, because as you observe, though, you need an environment free of wind because, you know, my game is that nuanced that if the air conditioning flips on, I scream, what the heck is going on in here? Right? Deb knows that. I'm kind of temperamental.
Yes.
I do that in the studio a lot.
Oh, sure.
Very, very temperamental. Very. Oh, by the way, you're listening to News Talk WLOB 1310 AM. This is Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. We've got Bill Ryan, owner of the Maine Red Claws, Oxford's Speedway, in recent Olympic attendee. So what else did you see other than badminton?
Saw the table tennis, the ping pong, the finals. It was two Chinese women in the finals. And it was actually – that was very interesting in that most of the makeup of the crowd was from China.
Wow.
And so they were – you know, yelling out chants in Chinese in support of their team, and occasionally somebody would yell something that was apparently very funny, but we were clueless as to it because the rest of the crowd laughed, and it was one of the few times in my life that I wish that I spoke Mandarin because I missed out on a lot of jokes during the play. But again, intense sport, you know, and actually one of the competitors got a yellow card during the match for complaining to the referee. She had been called for 3 illegal serves, and a yellow card in table tennis meant a point to the other woman. And she just totally lost her composure and wound up losing the match, even though she was the favorite. So that was, it was interesting. And it was, that was the one that I would say was the most culturally different, in that there was a passionate fan base there that was very much Chinese, and, you know, not a lot of Americans or Brits or anybody else. I mean, this was something that was hugely important to the fan base. And, you know, we were just kind of observers to it.
Wow. Do you know that you haven't been here to Tide Smart Global in quite some time, Bill, but do you know that we've installed a table tennis stadium over in the logistics center?
I did not know that.
It's true. It's true. We have competitions every night at 5:30.
You could probably have gotten some pointers. The one woman that I was amazed at, you know, usually you think of ping pong, you're serving from, I don't know, 6 inches off the ground.
Right.
She threw the ball as high in the air as you would for a tennis serve.
Really?
I don't know why. I think it would be more difficult, but the ball went 10 feet in the air, and then she hit it when it was, you know, a couple inches off of the surface. And they're very particular about their surface. Every time the ball between points, when it when it would hit someplace, they'd go over and kind of polish up that spot. And but yeah, that was definitely another interesting sport that I had never seen.
I use an inverted Mandarin grip when I play.
Yes, yeah, that was that would be my recommendation. You know, and I've kind of figured you for that. You know, that kind of
it's all about the spin,
right?
It really is. The aerodynamics of the ball is we play quite a bit. All kidding aside, and anyone listening that would like to, I don't think we've ever done any listener invitations or promotions, have we?
No.
Okay, let's put one out there right now. All 5,000 watts or 20,000 watts. How many watts do we have?
5,000.
We've got a lot. We've got a lot of watts right now. So it's Saturday. It's about, I don't know, 12:15 or something. People are driving to Home Depot and Lowe's and, you know, picking up that little thing to fix the leaky thing. And I'm going to put out a challenge to our vast listening audience right now. Deb, you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
I would invite anyone who's listening right now that wants to challenge Steve-O to table tennis, and we'll play international rules, and I will play anyone for, it's got to be interesting because we don't want we don't want any Yahoo just to show up, right? I will play anyone listening for $50 that I will donate to a local charity. Again, this isn't a profit motive because the spirit of table tennis and the Olympics is about competition and it's about, you know, goodwill among men. But anyone listening that wants to contact the station and say, I accept the Steve-O challenge.
Excellent.
And if I lose, I will donate $50 to the local Boys and Girls Clubs, which is a great organization.
Yes, it is.
And if the other person loses, I would expect them to do the same.
Great.
And best 2 out of 3 rounds.
There we go.
Bill, do you want to take up on the challenge later? No?
You know, I feel like I've learned a lot.
But you're not ready.
I'm not ready yet.
I need
some more time in the gym.
A man should know his own limitations,
need
Bill.
I need some more time in the basement, somebody's basement, working on my game.
Totally respect that. So you've seen badminton. You moved on to table tennis. Were there any, like, what some people would consider real sports that you saw? Was there anything that involved sweating, anything like that?
I saw basketball. I saw the USA play basketball. I saw them beat up on Tunisia. There wasn't a lot of sweating, actually, by the time the end of the third quarter rolled around and they were up 40 points.
What was the spirit like at the basketball? Because this isn't the original dream team, but certainly with LeBron James and certainly with the players they have, it's got to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, right? People were definitely rooting for the United States, pretty much everybody, I would say. I also, the game right before that was Argentina-France, and there's quite a few NBA players that play for both those teams. And they had quite passionate fans for both Argentina and France. Although I would say overall, the U.S. basketball team seemed to receive the most cheers and the most enthusiasm. One more thing on basketball, and you'll appreciate this. I didn't get a chance to see him. We missed each other quite a few times. But Champ Aguchi, who played for the Maine Red Claws 2 years ago, is on the Nigerian Olympic basketball team.
That's great.
He has Nigerian roots. His parents are from Nigeria. So You know, Champ was able to be in the Olympics, and like I said, we didn't meet up when we were over there. It was just difficult to do, but he had a great game the other day in their game against France, which they were basically knocked out of the tournament. France had, you know, just beat them, but Champ had 34 points against France on a really international stage. So it was great to see a former Maine Red Claw have success like that, and he's a super, super nice guy. And you know, obviously just extraordinarily excited because the road to the Olympics, for Nigeria to get to the Olympics, there's not a ton of teams that make the Olympics in basketball. I think it's 16. So to be one of those 16 teams was huge. And then, you know, it was just an exciting experience for him. And I know I've been back and forth with him a couple times messaging with him, and he's just had a great time. So that was a neat thing to have some, you know, kind of one of our own guys participate.
Well, that is great. Anything else? We got badminton, we've got table tennis, we've got basketball, we've got archery.
Yeah, women's water polo, which I had never seen before. That was, I tell you what, and I had heard it before but didn't appreciate it till I saw it. Water polo is an extremely rough game. And
they wear the headgear, right? It's almost like you can tackle somebody in water and because their ears would be pulled off.
Yeah,
right?
it's very rough. And I had the expectation going in, not knowing that, you know, most of the women would be, you know, typical, like what would you expect of a swimmer, you know, 5'9" and swimmer like. And there are some of those, but then they have more like guys or gals that look like they might have played football in high school.
When you say 5'9", swimmer-like, I always get into trouble when I make gender kind of designations at my house. How would you describe somebody who's swimmer-like? Just to, so I want to take a cue from you, so
tall,
when Katie asks me about stuff, I can go, this is how Bill describes swimmer-like.
Tall, slim with those, you know, muscular shoulders.
Shoulders.
Yeah, you know what I mean, right? From,
yeah.
You watch the Olympics. And,
yeah, those muscular shoulders, I'll go with that.
So there were some women like that on the team, but then there were also women that were, you know, 220 pounds that were in the middle fighting with other 220 pound women in front of the net, just killing each other.
Really?
It was incredible. It was just a different, I never knew that position existed. I didn't see the men's team, so I assume there's some big guys too that thrash about in front of the net. So it was definitely
and the funny thing about water polo is I don't know what the depth is, but it's not the shallow end of the pool.
Seven feet. Yeah, so you're not allowed to touch the bottom either. That's some kind of whistle, you know, if they can figure out that you did it. One of the fun things about that too was we were sitting in front of a lot of the parents for the U.S. Team.
Right.
And so they were like as passionate and crazy that you'd ever imagine. They knew all the rules. They're yelling at the referees about, you know, that she's hitting the bottom. You can tell she's hitting the bottom, or you know, or how's
well,
that
how do
a
you
penalty?
Hit the bottom? Unless the other player tackles you and pushes you under, you wouldn't naturally like hit the bottom, would you?
I think to give yourself some extra momentum to maybe propel yourself forward. Is my limited understanding. But man, the game that we saw, they wound up the U.S. wound up tying. It was in a preliminary round, so they tied, and they were up two or three goals at the end, and the fans that we were with were yelling at the referees that they got robbed, and so it was like being at a basketball game or any, you know, football game where people are just as passionate about
it. Well, if the pool is 7 feet tall, I've got another idea here, Deb.
I've got another
Olympic idea. All you need is like Manute Bol.
Yep.
All you need is a guy or a gal who's 7'6".
There you go.
How do they penalize them? Okay, they're over 7 feet tall. All they have to do is stand there. There's none of this treadmill stuff, none of these doggy paddle. All they got to do is stand there and just whip the ball in.
Have I ever told you my hockey goalie idea?
No, it's okay. Something like that? A big giant guy?
It's genius. It's genius.
Okay, let's go with that.
Every once in a while, there'll be an unfortunate person that, you know, has got themselves up to 1,000, 1,100 pounds.
Right. You're not looking over here, are you, Bill?
Nope, not at all.
Nope,
not at all.
Okay. Just saw you glance over with a little smirk on your face.
If you put them in the goal in a hockey game,
half the net's just
can't be
blocked
defeated,
by
right?
them just standing there.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's genius, isn't it?
You guys are amazing today. Oh, just amazing.
7 foot tall water polo players and 800 pound hockey goalies, and you know we got the game beat.
I think we're really capturing the Olympic spirit here, Bill. I think that's what the Greeks were thinking. I think when they were running through the hills, they were saying, you know, this is the thing that brings. I think they were thinking freakishly tall people and large people laying in front of hockey. But yeah, I do. I think that's an interesting idea, Sharky. Let's get on that.
Beach volleyball. I saw some beach volleyball.
That for me, watching the Olympics, and I don't know if I know Deb knows this, but I don't know if you know this. But there was a 3-year period where I was a tournament director, AVP volleyball.
Wow, I did not know that.
Running volleyball, beach volleyball events all over the world. And my most interesting and enjoyable event was about 18 years ago. We went to Cincinnati and we built a, for NBC, NBC primetime televised volleyball. We built a court, a sand volleyball court, right on an ice rink in the middle of a recreational center in Cincinnati. And it was a temporary court. And this was in the era of Karch Kirai, who was a really famous volleyball player. And for 3 years, I ran volleyball events, and unbelievably athletic, unbelievable athletes.
Yeah.
The women won the gold.
Yeah.
I haven't even checked to see how the men went. But that facility was one of the most scenic Olympic facilities from television. I don't know what it looked like when you were there.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, it was right in front of Buckingham Palace. I mean, it was just amazing where it was. But, yeah, and the atmosphere of that was extremely different than a lot of the other ones. A lot of the events didn't have any commentary at all, so you kind of just had to follow along. You know, it was different than basketball, had typical basketball commentary, but there was no commentary, say, during the table tennis, the ping pong, nothing. So you just had to watch, and there wasn't, didn't say, oh, point to this person or point to that person.
Right.
Now, volleyball had the atmosphere you would expect, where it was they were playing snippets of music between everything,
it's part of the sport.
Yeah, they actually had a dance team that came out like a you know, to entertain during, you know, the little breaks and
both men and women, I believe, right?
Yeah, so on the dance team. Yeah.
It was balanced.
Yeah, I only saw men's volleyball, men's beach volleyball. The day that we were there, I think we had tickets to a longer day, but it started pouring rain the day we were there, so we kind of chickened out a little bit and left after the men's match because it was coming down sideways, and it was a great venue. One thing I will say, just overall, I can't compliment the London organizers enough for how organized it was.
It was really tight. Everything was solid.
Unbelievable. It by far, and I've been to a number of different events, you know, just over the course of my life, either professionally or just personally, and this surpassed any of them by a factor of 10. It was so well organized. Everything was so efficient. The people that they had involved were so friendly. The transportation situation, which, you know, I feared going in a little bit because you hear things, it was just so easy. I mean, if they needed one person to do a job, they had three to make sure that nobody ever waited. I mean, I can't say enough about how well organized it was. And we had literally not one delay, you know, starting from, you know, getting off the plane. I mean, even that was, they were overstaffed. So, you went through customs and all of, you know, 30 seconds, no lines. Everything from the time you got off the plane to getting back on was just perfect.
You stayed at a big ritzy hotel, right?
No, fancy.
No, we stayed.
Actually, stayed in an apartment, It was a hotel, but it was made up of apartments. So we had a crazy little, you know, 2-bedroom place that was on 3 different levels and super tiny. And the first day we got there, it was unusually warm. It was about 80 degrees. And in the apartment, it was about 180 degrees. You know, they don't have any air conditioning or anything like that. So, but it was fun. It was located in a really nice spot. It was in Kensington, which was very convenient to we could jump right on the train there. And that's how we got around. We got around by subway the entire time. And
Did you have a chance to do that giant Ferris wheel thing? I don't even know what it's called.
The Eye. It's called The Eye. No, I'm actually deathly afraid of heights. So if you put me in that thing, I would have never made it back.
It revolves around half a mile an hour.
Yeah, it takes an hour. So I would have been in sheer terror for an hour.
Oh. Well,
I went on a double-decker bus. That was, I mean, close.
Well, did you see the changing of the guards? Did you see anything like that?
Did a lot of just Olympic stuff. You know, we took a tour bus around I had my son with me who just graduated high school and tried to give him a little bit of culture. And the total amount of culture was one of those bus tours that shows you the sights for like 3 hours. The rest was pure sports.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Isn't that exciting, Deb?
Totally.
And one quick question about the Olympics. What was the security like? Because there was a lot of hype beforehand that the organizers said that some contracting firm didn't get enough security. But did it feel like, you know, metal detectors at every venue, but they had it pretty tight where you zip through? Was it all pretty positive?
It was very positive. And I think what they did was, my understanding, just as you from reading, was that they were understaffed. They brought in the military. So there was a huge military presence running that kind of stuff. But every venue that you went into, you went through airport-style security. So, you know, you had to take off the belt and take all the metal out of your pockets and all that stuff. But again, in terms of organization, you know, where the typical airport you go, they might have three of these scanners. Here they'd have 50 of them. I mean, we never waited at all. The one line that we had, and it was more our fault than anything else, was the first thing we went to was archery, and we got there very early because the hype had been you got to get there early. We got there so early the gates weren't open, so we waited for a while. But everything else was super efficient. Like I said, they weren't understaffed at all. I felt like if anything, they had more people just to make sure that things flowed. And I think hats off to the military, because I think that's what happened, that they were the ones that came in and chipped in and were able to fill some of those slots. But they did a great job. I mean, there's not one thing that I could say, you know, they could have done this better or could have done that better. They were just so efficient. It was incredible.
That's great. We're with Bill Ryan, who's our sports correspondent here at Time Smart Talk with Steve-O, who we sent over to London Olympics. We just heard the full report. Thank you.
It was amazing.
It was. By the way, you're listening to News Talk, WLOB, 1310 AM, Time Smart Talk with Steve-O. And as always, for this interview or other interviews, just go to TideSmartRadio.com. It's all there, and plus photos. And after every show, Sharky does a little recap. And we've heard from listeners that some people think the recap is more interesting than the show itself.
No, it couldn't be.
I know, but Sharky is a, you know.
He's good.
He's quite literary. We're with Bill Ryan here, who is the chairman of the Maine Red Claws, who's owner of Oxford Plains Speedway and involved with some development. And let's talk a little racing, Bill. What's going on at Oxford? And there was a big event there, the TD race, where you had one of the NASCAR guys. And how's the racing season going this year?
You know, racing's been kind of an ugly business for a few years here. I think, NASCAR's faded a little bit, and my core constituency, core customers have faced some difficult economic times. So I think it's kind of a combination of NASCAR losing a little bit of its luster and tough economic times. So it's been a hard few years, but, I'm hoping that we've kind of stabilized and turned things around on the local racing scene. We did have our big event, the TD Bank 250, a few weeks back now, and Trevor Bayne, who won the Daytona 500 in 2011, came up. And it's been a history since 2004 when NASCAR basically put an open date in July. They have all their top series, the NASCAR Sprint Cup series is off, that we brought guys in, and guys have come in to race in the event. And it's been fun for our fans. You know, they've seen everybody from Matt Kenseth to Kyle Busch to Kurt Busch to Kevin Harvick to Trevor Bayne this year come and try to compete against the best drivers from around the region. And I think it's fun for the drivers too. You know, they don't like getting beat necessarily by the NASCAR guys, but I think it's fun to be able to say, I went door to door for 10 laps with Kyle Busch, and the fans certainly appreciate
it. How'd Trevor Bayne do this year?
He didn't do that well. He doesn't have a lot of experience, to be honest, in this kind of car, which sounds kind of funny, but he's a relatively young guy and he jumped pretty quickly to the top series in NASCAR. So he doesn't have a lot of experience in this kind of car, and each car is different. It seems like, what could be that different about it? Well, there is. You know, there's a lot that's different for him. So I think he just never really got a handle on it. You know, he competed and did the best he could, but he just never got a handle on the car.
And is it every Saturday? What events do you have for the remaining of the summer going into the fall?
We run Wednesdays and Saturdays for the heart of the summer here. So to basically till Labor Day, we'll run Wednesdays and Saturdays. After that, we have a few more events on Saturdays and wind up the season September 30th, which is actually Sunday. We have a couple events that weekend. But, it's a relatively short season in Maine here. We used to start earlier in April and fight with the weather. And now we start mid-May, and most of the tracks, local tracks, do and end by the end of September. But try to pack as much racing in as we can. It's always exciting. You know, I tell people that if you haven't seen a race live, the comparison I make is hockey. You know, people always talk about how hockey is much better live than it is on television. And I feel racing is much the same way. And short track racing in particular, my track is 3/8 mile. So if you think your high school running track, which is a quarter mile, add an eighth of a mile to that and put 20, 30, 40 cars going 70 to 90 miles an hour on it and imagine what's going to happen. You know, there's action every lap. It's not like maybe a race that if somebody's seen it on TV where you might have 43 cars at Daytona, that's two-mile track. They can get spread out. You can't get spread out. At Oxford or any of the local tracks, all the action's right packed in there. And, you know, it's usually very exciting.
I've heard a rumor that sometimes to add to the event and add to the excitement that you have U.S. Senate candidates wave the green flag.
We did. We had we had Charlie Summers up last week, and he waved the green flag. And I can always tell when it's political season because I get calls from everybody that's running wanting to come up and do stuff, and I'm always willing to.
What's the procedure again to make that request? Sharky, write this down, please. We've got because I don't know if, again, I have utmost respect for Secretary of State Summers, but I, of course, have gone through Bondurant racing training, gone through Richard Petty.
Nice.
I've raced on the big tracks.
Yeah.
I have experience. Not just are some of my friends racetrack or race car owners, but I am, as Deb knows.
You are NASCAR.
I am. Well, Deb... Deb, you're laughing. What are you laughing about, Deb?
I just had a great idea.
Oh, boy.
Why don't we put all of you candidates in a vehicle and give you one lap around, and the winner wins the seat.
In one vehicle? Or everyone gets their own vehicle?
No, everybody gets their own vehicle.
Because it sounded at first like you were going to put us in a van.
No.
And then it was going to be something uncomfortable.
I think that'd be a great way to choose the winner of the race this year.
I would love to do that. Mm-hmm. All kidding aside, let's do that because with my Bondurant training, Richard Petty training, experience in NASCAR, I know about the apex. I know about going into the corner.
You're going to win this.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you were going Demolition Derby because that has its own appeal.
I love that too.
Who doesn't love that?
So we used to have school buses that we would race. And I think that would be a fun one. I actually got rid of them. They got too beaten up. But we used to have six or seven or eight school buses. We'd put people in them, and they'd go around and beat and bang on each other, around the track. And
fun stuff.
That would be good. So if we could come up with three school buses and see who's got.
Yeah, if we have the six candidates, we've got
six.
Six.
Wow.
Well. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There was a thoughtful pause there.
Yes.
There'll be six.
Good.
Angus would be driving around, and he would be.
He could drive his motorhome.
He
that?
Could.
That's
do
right. He might have an advantage.
He have a motorcycle. He could do his motorhome. He could be sharing quotes from Mark Twain through the speaker system, which is an interesting way to race. I think. Charlie would need to be in a vehicle with
convertible.
No.
So we can see his hair.
I know. We want to see his hair, but it's much like badminton where you want to be in a climate-controlled environment because the wind can affect badminton just as much as Charlie's hair. And we've got Cynthia, who my guess is she's probably kind of an aggressive driver because
she's
very kind of – and then I'm a racer. I think I'm down.
I think it's a great idea.
I don't know if we have a an alternative energy powered vehicle that we could throw out there for anybody
genius.
Who might want it.
Yeah,
genius. We should put that together.
Get
Why
some
not
of those
invite
environmental votes?
Do this, Bill. Put an invitation to all the candidates and say, "Here's what we're doing." And if I'm the only guy that shows up, fine.
So
fine, no problem.
Jerry Gappens, who's the general manager of New Hampshire Motor Speedway, which is the big NASCAR track over in New Hampshire, I thought he did, which was just a clever. It was a promotion kind of thing, but. He invited President Obama to their last race and, said there'll be tickets at the will call window for you, Mr. President, if you're interested. And, of course, the president politely declined or, through a spokesperson or whatever. So then they actually auctioned off the quote-unquote president's tickets for charity.
Very cool.
Which was nice, So I at that, when I heard about that, I actually have a standing invitation out to President Obama, to candidate Romney. So, who knows? I mean,
Well, I can tell you because I'm not invited to many things that I'll be there.
Okay.
Let me check the schedule. Okay, August is blank. Let me look at September. Nothing on September.
You don't have a...
October. What do we got in October? October looks wide open. Cammy has a Halloween party. I've got a driver, too. So I'm open.
You got to be hitting the lobster festivals and the strawberry festivals and all that stuff. Don't you have a pack schedule?
Yeah, yeah. We call that dinner time. We call that...
Every night is a lobster festival.
Every night. Katie, what are we doing for dinner? Well, it looks like we need to go to the lobster fest at the Weather Vane, and then next day let's go to the grill room, which is fine. And let's move on to the next sport. By the way, we've got Bill Ryan Jr. in the studio, involved with all types of sports here in Maine, and... We've covered badminton, table tennis, basketball, archery, women's water polo, beach volleyball. That was your recent Olympic experience.
Yep.
You're the owner of the Oxford track. We've got it. Oh, before we leave Oxford,
sure.
Because there's a whole thing here. What's going on in beautiful Oxford? There's a new casino out
got
there.
Got a casino,
I stopped there briefly. Have you been inside it?
I've been in briefly, too. Yeah, it's nice. They've done a good job with it. And, you know, I'm really hopeful. Oxford is a tough, tough economic area right now, as you know. I know you've done a lot of studying of the state here and what's going on and, you know, high unemployment. And, I think it's good for the area. I think they're doing extremely well. I know they're already have an expansion in place, but it's a nice place. It's probably smaller than people would imagine, but with the increase in size here, with their new expansion, it'll be good. And it seems like it's always busy.
Right. Yeah, it's mostly slot machines. They've got some table games.
Got some tables in there, yeah, a lot of slot machines.
Their next phase is supposed to be in the fall where they open up another section. They've got some sort of zoning thing going on.
Don't know anything about that.
I know. But,
don't know. It's legal stuff.
Yeah, it's all a mystery.
I left it all. I left all the legal stuff.
You also, before we get, we're getting on to the other sports now that we've covered badminton, now we've covered gambling, boxing. you own, you're still active with the tubing park in the wintertime up there?
Yep. I have a tubing park right up before the speedway. So it's kind of a lazy man sledding is how I describe it. We drag you up the hill on an old ski tow rope and you slide down. It's, it's crazy, but fun. And, we have the capacity to make snow up there, which is always great.
Snow making at the tubing park.
Get snow making. So it's fun. It's very busy, in winter vacations when there's people want to get the kids out of the house and see what they can do. And you can throw the kids up on the hill and sit in our little warming hut and watch them come down crazily.
Cool. Let's move on to Maine Red Claws. You're the chairman, and really it was your vision and your dad's vision and John Jennings who was key in bringing the team to Portland 3 years ago. What's that experience been like looking back over the last 3 years, and what can fans and listeners look forward to going forward this next season?
Yeah, I think the experience has been a lot of fun. You know, it was one of those things that you mentioned, John. It was John Jennings' initial idea. He had been in basketball and had gotten out of basketball and was doing some political stuff but wanted to get back into it, and he had the idea that he wanted to put an NBA Development League team someplace in New England. Started thinking about Portland. We connected. He called me out of the blue, really, just because I was already in the sports business, and we were able to, put it together. And but it's been a ton of fun. You know, we've gotten great support. People I think from Maine recognize the passion that people in Maine have for basketball, right. And we've had great support all the way through. I think probably the most exciting development for this year is we've entered into a single affiliate relationship with the Boston Celtics. We'd always been affiliated with the Celtics, but we had multiple affiliates. We were affiliated with the Charlotte team for all 3 years, and then we added the 76ers, the Philadelphia 76ers last year. So we had three affiliates. Now we've turned over our basketball operations to the Celtics, meaning the Celtics pick all our players, they pick our coaches. They're the ones that will decide if somebody needs to be traded or somebody needs to be cut or we need to bring somebody in. And we'll be running, the coaches are really an extension of Doc Rivers' staff. So they'll be running what the Celtics run so that a guy can go, back and forth without any problem. The other exciting thing, and it comes at a good time for us, is there's a rule change this year. There used to be a limit on the amount of times you could send a player back and forth to the minor leagues. That rule is gone now. So literally next year we could see, you know, Fab Mello, using an example, for a guy that right. you know, I read anyway, that may need some development. We could see him in Portland one night playing for the Maine Red Claws.
He was just picked in the last NBA draft.
Yeah, right? Just picked in the last NBA draft, Syracuse graduate, or Syracuse, probably not a graduate, probably came out
attendee.
Early. Yeah,
yeah.
Attendee. But he could be with us one night and down with the Celtics the next day practicing if they wanted them, and then back with us. So there'll be a lot more, I think, free flow of players, plus the confidence that Doc and Danny Ainge will have that when they send a player to us, they're running the same system. They're using the same terminology. And it's a lot more complicated, I guess, than people would imagine in terms of, you know, sure, basketball is basketball, but the precision in which these guys operate in defensive terminology and offensive terminology is a little bit more complicated, I think, than people realize.
Yeah, this has been quite a basketball couple of weeks, because last week we had Dave Cowens.
Nice.
NBA great, Celtic player for about 10 years, three-time champion, MVP player. The stat that I thought, you've met and you know Dave Cowens, but the stat that I talked to him about that was the most interesting stat was, I think it was 1973, he became, or he is now, one of only four NBA players in history to lead his team at the end of the season in all five statistical categories: points, rebounds, blocks, assists, and steals.
Yeah, he's a great player, and it's funny. It's one of those things that you feel bad after you say it, but I grew up watching him, and I think when I met Dave for the first time, I said, "Oh man, I grew up watching you." And I don't think any athlete likes to hear that when a middle-aged adult tells you that they grew up watching you. You know,
same thing. I grew up outside of Boston. I had the same feeling. And, you know, Dave and I had lunch last week, and he's a really great guy. And a lot of people may be unaware that he lives about half the time here in Maine, and enjoys coming to Maine. He had since he was a Celtic. But yeah, the thing I feel bad about, and I don't think I mentioned this to Dave last week, because he's still pretty big. He's really big. He's very, very big. Is, to me, it's a little bit sad that his era of basketball was just before the saturation of the media world as we know it, just before the internet, just before ESPN was in that era, but it was just kind of coming online. Because when you look at his career and his style of playing, he was just such a tenacious player in the championships. And he had one year, his final year, I think it was 79 or 80, he overlapped one year with Larry Bird, and he was kind of a mentor to Larry Bird. But Larry Bird's era and the Magic Johnson's era was the first modern culture of NBA basketball.
Sure.
And there's a ton of stuff that happened in the 70s where, whether it has to do with the levels of compensation, whether it has the levels of media, a lot of people who know basketball know Dave Cowens, but a lot of people that don't, unfortunately, don't give him and guys of his era credit because they're unbelievable. It happens in every industry, every sport, every, you know, there's different cycles, but in my mind, one of the greatest NBA players ever.
That's the most dramatic one to me, and you mentioned it in terms of compensation. That's the craziest thing to me. I mean, I don't know what Dave's top salary was. I bet you it was $500,000 a year.
Right.
I don't know that. But you look at what all-stars, you know, guys that were perennial all-stars in any of those sports made up until probably late 70s, early, you know, 1980. They made nothing compared to journeyman guys now. You know, you can be, you know, not to pick on anybody, but you can be a Brian Scalabrine type and make multiple millions of dollars a year, have a 10, you know, 15-year career, and make $30, $40, $50 million over your career, and never really make any kind of large contribution in the same way that a guy like Dave Cowens did, who probably, if he made $5 million in an entire career, I'd be shocked.
Yeah, and the reason, by the way, we've got Bill Ryan here in the studio as the chairman of the Maine Red Claws and our foreign correspondent for sports coverage at the Olympics. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on WLOB 1310 AM. The reason is, I believe, is the economics is when mass media expanded through cable and expanded globally, that's the conduit that feeds the beast.
Yeah.
Because the advertising, the viewers, the eyeballs, the more people that watch the sport, the more advertising goes into the sport, and then that money through collective bargaining and through the economics of the sport kind of ends up a big part of it down with the players. And until TV had the effect that it did and ESPN did starting in the 80s and the 90s and obviously in the last decade, earlier generations didn't have that exposure. And now when the sport's global, and you see it in the Olympics with Team USA, almost every international team has an NBA player on it. You know, whether it's Spain or Australia, other countries are developing NBA caliber players, and that adds more money through licensing, through media deals and all that. And Dave Cowens, I think, he's a great guy, and he's not bitter. He's had a great career.
Sure.
He's had a great life, but it just feels like, you see some of these other guys now where some player who may be the 12th guy in the bench who's made, $20, $30 million, and he really couldn't or shouldn't shine Dave Cowens' shoes. And, he didn't get the right first-class seat,
right,
or somebody didn't give him a bathrobe at the end of the game or something. You want to hit him upside the head and say, really? Really?
That's a pretty sweet life for all professional athletes.
Yeah. In the next few minutes we have, you're involved with Thompson Point, and I know that things are still developing there.
Sure.
And what's the general status in terms of what's going on at Forefront at Thompson Point?
Things are going really well. About a month and a half ago now, received our site plan approval from the city of Portland, which is obviously a long process and one that requires a lot of work and a lot of work on the part of our consultants and people that help us in terms of, the civil engineering aspects of things and rail crossing aspect of things. So, that was quite an accomplishment to get it done and get it done relatively quickly. So we're still making progress every day, working on things. Still have planning to resolve and issues to resolve, but hopefully that stuff will get done sooner rather than later. But certainly the site plan approval was a huge step forward for us.
And the proposal is for the Forefront at Thompson Point, that would be at some point in a few years the future arena for the Red Claws.
Yeah, we're planning on building an event center that would house about 3,500 seats for basketball, 4,500 or so for a concert. It's a nice size. It's nothing that's in the marketplace now. It's nothing that will be in the marketplace unless we bring it into the marketplace. And then, in addition to that, we're going to have a hotel right there, a number of office buildings, and some other amenities for people, restaurant. And it's a really interesting project, and we've been right on task and right on schedule here in terms of getting it moving, and looking forward to kind of completing all the dotting I's and crossing T's here and getting it going in earnest so we can actually get it in the ground.
Sounds great. We're running out of time here, Deb. We've covered a lot. We've covered, the recap is we've got Bill Ryan Jr. here. He's owner of the Red Claws Oxford Speedway. He's our Olympics correspondent that was just over in London. We sent him over. What an excellent report he brought back.
Excellent.
Women's water polo is more aggressive than people thought. Check. Archery, more difficult. Badminton players are, this is fantastic. Well, where can we send Bill next?
I don't know.
What do you have, world championships? We have anything going on? Now that you've been exposed to world-class badminton, is this something you want to follow? Can we?
I think so, yeah. I know the international play resumes in Kuala Lumpur in April, next April. So I assume that I'll probably have to cover that for you guys.
That may be where we want to send our correspondence.
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, I want to thank you. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. And, of course, if it's Saturday, you're listening to News Talk WLOB 1310. And, Bill, thank you so much. And hopefully we'll have you come back to these palatial studios.
I appreciate it. It's a lot of fun.
It has been a lot of fun. And thank you, everyone, for listening this week. We will be back next week, same place on the dial, same time. And thank you for joining us. It's been Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. And I am Steve-O. Thank you.